No, Titans Pod will be a podcast where myself, Brian, and others with Antenpod Radio, we're going to review Marvel Wolfman's run on New Teen Titans, but this one will be recorded on phones, and it's just another way of doing stuff, and we can always do these wherever we are, because I mean, all of us have a smartphone that can record really quick audio with decent quality. So yeah, this is gonna be a no frills, no music, no any of that podcast, and we'll just talk Teen Titans, and hopefully it'll be a lot of fun and people will like that. So further ado, we'll get to number zero, which is an introduction that was written by Marv Wolfman that was included in one of the trades. So hope you enjoy these. Welcome to the podcast where we review not every issue, but we review New Teen Titans, the Marv Wolfman, George Perez run, starting with Teen Titans, Volume 1, and we'll do it each issue. To start this first episode, I'm going to read from the introduction that Marv Wolfman does in the first volume trade here. So, and this is Marv Wolfman in the introduction. In the Batman story that appeared in the April 1940 issue of Detective Comics, National Comics, now DC Comics, introduced Robin, the Boy Wonder, the first of what be a long line of superhero sidekicks. The common wisdom at the time was that a young sidekick would appear more to comic book readers than the adult parental figure hero, because readers would be better able to identify with someone of their own age. Garbage. As a kid reader, I hated kid sidekicks. How on earth could I, a slightly overweight, non-sports enthusiast comic book reader, identify with some superhero kid doing triple flips on a high beam all the while spouting quick witticisms? I was a sidekick's age. I knew I could never be him. On the other hand, the adult hero is something I could, in my most insane fan delusion, inspire to become. Also, if truth be told, I hated the way kid heroes were drawn, which was short, very short, munchkin short. The DC kids, Robin, Kid Flash, Aqualad, Speedy, etc., all seemed to rise up to slightly above waist high on the hero. So as adults, they'd be what? 4'2"? Yeah, I'd be really afraid of them. Furthermore, the kids didn't act like me or my friends. They used outdated slang that no self-respecting real kid used. Heck, most of my friends barely used slang at all. The sidekicks were also respectful of all elders. Let's not even begin to go there. Sometimes I wondered if Robin had to ask Batman's permission to go to the little hero's room. I truly believed that if I ever got the chance to write teenage heroes, I'd at least try to make them appeal as close to what I felt like as a teen as I could. They would be real people first and superheroes second. They would also be completely responsible for themselves. Why should superheroes with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men have to answer to adult mentors? Not on my watch. In the very late 1960s, shortly after we became semi-professional comic book writers, Len Wein, my best friend and fellow writer, and I got the chance to write an issue of DC's sidekick comic, The Teen Titans. Though our ideas at the time outstripped our talent, we were determined to make these teen heroes act the same way we and our friends acted. During the 1970s, I moved to Marvel Comics, where I wrote and edited on a number of titles, including Tomb of Dracula, The Man Called Nova, The Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man. I also was assigned Marvel 2-in-1, a team-up comic featuring a Fantastic Four's theme character and some other Marvel hero. Now, if I didn't like teen heroes, I absolutely hated writing team-up books. My forte, I believed, was developing characters, not writing one-shot adventures, and team-up books were all about solo stories. In 1980, when I decided to make the switch from Marvel to DC, I asked DC not to assign me to any team-up titles. So naturally, my first two DC assignments were Brave and the Bold and World's Finest, both single story team-up books. I knew the only way to get off these assignments was to come up with new titles to write. Because I had enjoyed working on the Titans, I asked if there would be interest in reviving the long-deceased series. The answer was no. The powers that be believed readers were so turned off by what had gone on during the previous incarnation of the title, they would never buy a new version. Not the kind who ever took no for an answer, I began to come up with some new ideas. Rather than just redo the book, we would create a few new characters, even as we juiced up some of our favorite old Titans. I'm often asked how we came up with the new Titans. The answer is both simple and very complex. It is my belief the best characters have strong, traumatic origins that you can constantly revisit and find new wrinkles to play with. Superman's origin echoed the biblical story of Moses. Doomed to die, an infant was sent by his parents on a journey to another land where he grew up to become a great hero. Batman watched as his parents died. Spider-Man let a burglar kill his uncle, and from that day on, his guilt motivated him to combat crime. These heroes were born of tragedy, and the trauma that created them continued to motivate them throughout their adventures. Psychologically speaking, we are what we were. The new Titans would be created in the same way, and their origins would control their later actions. Starfire was an alien princess whose weak-willed father, Meander, sold her into slavery in order to save his planet from destruction. Raven's mother was an Earth woman raped by an interdimensional demon. In order to save Vic Stone's life, his father had to turn his son into a living cyborg. Are you sensing another pattern? The Titans' origins all stem from parent-child differences. The theme from the Titans began and remained young versus old, son and daughter versus father and mother. These universal conflicts understood by teens as they grew up and separate from their parents could be revisited time and time again. I believe they gave the Titans a depth of character that had not up to this time been often seen in comics. There was more. I believe that the Titans themselves needed to be emotional at odds with each other, even while they needed to be friends. To facilitate this, I set up two theoretical triangles, one for the male characters, one for the females. For example, put Wonder Girl at the top of the women's triangle. Dinah Troy came from an Amazon race who believed not only in peace, but were also warriors. On one corner of the triangle, put Raven, whose interdimensional society were extreme pacifists who would never fight, knowing to save their lives. On the other corner, put in Starfire, who comes from a pure warrior culture. Three sides of the same coin, so to speak, with enough in common that they would be friends, but with enough differences to keep them at odds. This fundamental conflict, one hoped, would create good stories. Also, take a look at them emotionally. Raven was shy and introverted and found it difficult to confide in others. Starfire was outgoing and pure lusty emotion. Wonder Girl, once again, was directly in the middle. The same kind of triangle was created for the guys. Robin, later Nightwing, was the level-headed and capable leader who, because he was kept on a tight leash by Batman, often felt inadequate for the task at hand. He also had a need to prove himself to Batman. Because everyone in his life had died on him, Changeling believed he had very little to offer anyone and covered it up with outward bravado. Cyborg was a logical scientist type who rejected that approach to become an angry young man. Nightwing's logical approach to life and anger towards his parent was shared by Cyborg, while his feelings of inadequacy were shared by Changeling. Cyborg and Changeling had been also physically altered by their parents, and that helped bring them together. The characters were created so that they would play off each other, but they were still only words on paper. They seemed to have real life breathed into them. Oh, they, no, sorry. They needed to have real life breathed into them. that happened when George Perez come onto the scene. I'd known George at Marvel and liked him. We'd fought early on when I was an editor and he was a newbie artist, but as time went on, we became friends. George specialized in drawing group comics, the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, etc. The more characters, the merrier. George was also one of the very best storytellers among the younger artists. He would be the perfect artist to bring the Titans to life. Like Starfire and Raven, George and I are similar but opposites. George is outgoing and gregarious, while I'm rather quiet and introverted. Still, like other characters, we somehow clicked. I saw George up at Marvel one day and asked if he'd be interested in working on the new Titans comic. George was looking for something new to draw and figured that the Titans would only last a few issues, but it would be fun to draw. You see, in 1980, DC was having a rough time selling comics. Most new books were canceled after only 6 issues, so it wasn't that far-fetched to believe the Titans would be a fun ride for a few months before once again going off into comic book limbo. Armed with George as artist and Lynn Wynn as editor, Lynn and I met with the powers that be and verbally pitched the new Titans idea. We talked about how this would be like no other Titans comic. It would be powerful, it would be fun. Who knows, might even sell. We must have given a great pitch because we not only got the Titans comic, but we were asked to do a 16-page story that would be inserted free into another title, DC Comics Presents number 26. George got started designing the characters. To say his designs were absolutely spot on, perfect, would be to diminish his accomplishments. He made Kora, Vic, Raven, and the original O Titans, Robin, Kid Flash, Wonder Girl, and Beast Boy, modified to Changeling, into real people. I've said it before and I'll keep saying it. There's no better artist partner in comics than George. Ask anyone who's worked with him. Before the first issue came out, when only the ads for the comic were starting to appear, we received a ton of mail complaining about about these new Titans. Who were these characters? Get them out of the book. Bring back Garnark, the Cave Titan. After issue one came out, the very same readers wrote back swearing allegiance to the new Titans. George and I were ecstatic. The new Teen Titans number one sold through the roof. They liked it. They really liked us, but we still didn't think the book would last. Issue one sold well. Issue two didn't sell as well. Three sold even poorer. Four worse. Five was in a dumper. Six, well, six we beat out the sales of issue number one, and we never stopped climbing. Note: to those of you who cancel comics with their second or third issue before they have a chance to find their audience, think about this. The Titans became a surprise hit. George stayed on the book for almost 5 years. Then he returned a few years later for another short run. I remained as writer for over 16 years, which must be a record of some sort. But at last, I ran out of stories I needed to tell, and sales started to decline. So I asked DC to let me off the book. We agreed to cancel the new Teen Titans with my last issue. I'm very proud that I've been able to co-create so many characters that have resonated with so many readers, and I hope that George and my Titans will be around for many generations of readers to come. It's almost 19 years later as I write this, and although there are more than a few of the nearly 250 Titan stories I wrote that I wish had never been printed, I still deeply love those characters. Here's hoping you feel the same. Marv Wolfman, November 7th, 1998.